So my job is, in my first talk, is to lay the foundation for understanding what SnapEd is all about. And could I just have a quick show of hands for people in the audience who are already working with SnapEd? Most people, good. So what I'm going to try to do is upgrade, let me see here, get my slides. What I'm going to try to do is start by giving you some foundations of the history of the program from an historical perspective, administrative, legal, and financial perspective that will help us in our discussion about evaluation in the future. So thinking together, the background that most of us in public health have is one of health promotion, where our job is to help enable people to make change in their lives and to move beyond a focus on individual education or counseling or that sort of thing. And as a result, that's a complicated job. The evaluation of this kind of work is very complicated. There are many different disciplines, scientific disciplines, that contribute to the field, whether it's marketing or behavior change or political science. There's a mix of methods, therefore, that you need to use when you're trying to evaluate a program. Typically, change is going to take a long time, so it's very difficult to show results on an annual basis or even a 2 or 3 year basis. You have to be able to separate out what's happening secularly because of other things that are going on and try to tease out what you might be contributing in your own program. And usually, as a result, we're able to just draw associations and correlations and not really claim causation. So thinking about the background that is out in the world about approaches to health promotion, CDC has been, of course, one of the major leaders, the major governmental leader in the area of health promotion. And they typically, through their funding categories, have taken two approaches. One out of the community program part of CDC has focused on community capacity building. A second area out of the Division of Nutrition and Physical Activity has typically focused on strategies. So whether it's sugar-sweetened beverages or complete streets or fruit and vegetable consumption. So there's been this combination of approaches that state health departments and grantees of CDC have had to kind of navigate through the different funding streams. And then there have been increasingly volume of other players that have made a huge difference in changing the environment in which this work occurs. I have to start, of course, with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the seminal work that it does for action, advocacy, and research. And I think that the Institute of Medicine reports on childhood obesity, as well as its other rich agenda of activities, whether it's action for healthy, the research programs on nutrition or physical activity, as well as the organizations that they fund and so forth, has made a huge difference. Other players you recognize, Action for Healthy Kids has kind of an industry background. Alliance for Healthier Generation came out of President Clinton's background. Let's Move is coming out of the First Lady's office. The Partnership for Healthier America is a private sector effort to support the First Lady's initiatives. And then we have many regional initiatives going on around the country, which may be coming out of health insurers, they may be coming out of foundations at different levels, they may be coming out of Affordable Care Act kinds of changes that are occurring. So thinking back with this background, what is health promotion and how do we evaluate it? I'd like to then take a deep dive, a fairly deep dive, into the background that comes with SnapEd so that we can really focus in on how can SnapEd really make a difference and build on and complement whatever other things are going on. So the history of SnapEd is that it got its statutory beginning back in 1981, and nobody ever heard of it, right? And I want to point out that you have handouts in your chair that do give you some of this detail. So it's not anything, it's something that you can look at there. But when that opportunity for the FNIP program to secure federal financial participation through SNAP was created in 1981. But by 1992, when the Clinton folks came to office and looked to see how was the country doing with dietary guidelines for Americans, and found that it wasn't doing very well, the effort was made, a report was commissioned to look at what would work in nutrition education for different population segments, particularly those vulnerable groups for which USDA programs were responsible. And as a result of that commissioned report that was overseen by Dr. Isabel Contento, there were a series of ultimately 22 planning grants that ranged from $100,000 to $200,000 for the purposes of trying to build social marketing nutrition networks for SNAP and similar low-income people, developing a coalition in the state, developing a state plan, and then developing the way that federal financial participation could be raised to qualify for matching funds through SNAP. So that the first of those programs was funded in 1997, and by 2004, all states had some level of SNAP ed occurring, or food stamp nutrition education as it was then called, occurring in their state. At the same time, though, the program, as you can see, was growing tremendously. It went from less than $1 million in the early 90s to $280 million just 10 years later. And so this was a cause for the Office of Management and Budget, which is the oversight accounting agency for the executive branch, to take a peek and see what was going on. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So while that was going on, the Farm Bill of 2008 changed the name of the program from food stamps, because there were no longer stamps. It was now electronic benefit transfer. It didn't make sense anymore. And they wanted the word nutrition in the language. And so now we have SNAP as of 2008. And then there's a convergence that happened with the Child Nutrition Reauthorization, which we know as Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, to put some changes for SNAP ed into that authorization, and that was done by the Senate because it has joint authority over both the Farm Bill, which is where SNAP lives and SNAP Ed lives, and the Child Nutrition Reauthorization, where the Child Nutrition and WIC programs live. And so that's kind of bringing us up to fairly current thinking. But I want to go back and talk about theory. One of the things that was a criticism in that report I mentioned that was commissioned by USDA is that the nutrition ed programs didn't have a theory base. And so since then, we've really worked around using the social ecological model, which Andy will talk about. But what I want to bring up, just to clarify, is that there's kind of two versions. One is a five-sphere version, not a virgin, a five-sphere version with five spheres of influence, and then the one that's in the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which is only four spheres. And so I hope you won't struggle with that too much as we go through some of the next discussion. Let me focus on what the big changes were in Healthy Hunger-Free Kids, because usually what you hear is, oh, we can do PFEs now, policy, systems, and environmental change. But in reality, there were a lot of other important changes that we need to understand to be able to navigate the important legal background of this program. So the first five things, I would say, were things that we in the field really wanted to see happen. And they were really brought forward by advocates that had been working on the Farm Bill, as well as by staff that were working in Congress. And so number one, instead of being an optional program, SNAP Ed was established as a real program within the Farm Bill, and that's really important. It was renamed, as you've heard here. It established that the eligibility could be for people 185% of poverty in similar means-tested programs, rather than just solely SNAP participants and people under 130% of poverty. It added physical activity, community and public health approaches, and it required evidence-based approach, which was becoming very, very popular in the different federal programs. But the downside was, and I guess it depends how you look at it, that the funding was block granted and capped. So it was block granted to the states with a reallocation formula, which meant that there would be more equitable distribution over a five-year period to all the states. There was a guaranteed level of funding that people could plan on, but it was basically lost half of its funding at that point because the state and local matching requirement went away. So instead of, say, an $800 million effort cumulatively with the state, local, and federal shares, we were really talking about $400 million. So what we have now, and trying to turn this very diverse program into an organized approach, is a set of definitions. And this is in the guidance for SNAP Ed, so I'm not going to belabor it. But it does point out that we have education and environment combination, and that we work through multiple venues, and we use individual, community, and appropriate little p policy approaches. So just keep that in mind. In SNAP Ed statistics, just probably most of you are familiar, but are the audience that we're supposed to be supporting is about 95 million people who have incomes below 185% of poverty, and that is difficult, right? To think that there's that many people with that level of income. Right now, funding through the 52 SNAP state agencies is going to 124 state implementing agencies, and these are different kind of entities coming from different cultures. So universities, extensions, nonprofits, state health departments, and tribal organizations. In 2014, we know that we reached 6 million people with direct education, and we were in about 45,000 community sites with that budget of $400 million. There's an infrastructure that you're probably familiar with, but basically it goes from Washington to the regional offices to the state social services department to the implementing agencies, and then with the agencies that they contract with, and in turn, many of those agencies subcontract with others. So there are probably thousands of entities, maybe a couple thousand, not thousands and thousands, that are working in SNAP Ed. There's considerable oversight. And so I've already mentioned the statute. There also are interim regulations. There's annual guidance. State plans have to be written and approved. The budgets are written and approved. There's a semi-annual reporting system, an annual report, and the famous management evaluations, MEs. I referred to this OMB rating, and that happened in 2007. And you can see the scores. The areas that that OMB looked at and the scores that SNAP Ed got at the time, and the bottom line is results not demonstrated. When OMB went back to look in 2010, they basically didn't score it again, but they looked at what they had recommended and what USDA had said would happen. And the three bullets on your right are the critiques that we're trying to address in the program now. So developing standard measures, having much clearer goals and outcomes, and having good accountability for the money. So our methods, as I mentioned, are direct education. That's the foundation. Social marketing, and that doesn't just mean media. It means that combination of using commercial techniques, but in addition with the public health techniques. And then finally, public PSEs. And I want to just mention how we define policy. It's little p, it's written organizational changes. It's not big P like legislation and that sort of thing. Systems change would be unwritten organizational decisions that are made. And environmental change isn't just the physical or the built environment, but includes an economic environment, the media environment, social environment. So it's very broad, and you can kind of see all the measures that would take to get your hands around this. I won't go through this too much except to know that we've tried to define our terms as clearly as possible so we can talk with each other about what it is we're trying to do and what it is we're trying to measure. And so the idea of the domains eat, live, learn, work, play, and shop, we're trying to touch people at every opportunity with cues to action and making it easier to make the healthy choice. I want to just clarify the channel systems in sight. A channel is a category of organizations or a category of similar industry groups. Systems can be companies and sites can be locations. So a retail supermarkets would be a channel. The different companies would be systems, and the different stores would be sites. And you can carry that on to other channels like schools or work sites. We also are using the REAM framework to try to provide discipline in taking evidence-based approaches and diffusing them not only through the programs that we're delivering, but as we work with partners that we deliver together. And so you're going to hear more about this, but just to know that reach is always people and the volume of messaging that goes to the people. Adoption is about organizations. Implementation is about signing on and signing up. Effectiveness is, did it work? And last is, it can it be sustained? And so last, just to know that this really is part of a collective impact effort where we've started with networking and communication and coordination and collaboration. We're now striving to reach a common agenda, having continuous communications and so forth. If you're in the last session, you heard that. And establish what the role is that of SNAP-Ed as part of backbone organization for continuous change. So there's a lot of new leadership resources that are coming, and you'll hear more about those. And so I think that's my... So let me turn now to Andy and ask him to bring you up to date on the exciting work that's going on to make sense out of this very diverse program activity.